Before many of you were born, our parents caused the great crash. They were consumed with greed. They ignored repeated warnings and borrowed more money than they could ever repay. They lost our farms, lost our factories, lost our homes. Alien races foreclosed on our nation while we were locked in homeless camps. Now America belongs to the enemy. Forget your parents. They didn't care about us.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and of course with me today, as always, is Sam Stepanenko.
I have my skates in the closet.
I used to have some blades. Yeah,
for that you never used. I think you used them like once.
They were my dad's, and he took a tumble, and that was it. And then I think he wanted them back, so I don't even have those anymore.
I got rid of mine. Yeah, give me roller skates. I'm fine. Inline blades. I suck.
Trish Coughlin, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
And most of you who saw the headline to this week's episode probably don't know what the hell this is.
You're probably going, what the fuck?
This comes from, boy, Sam and I's video store days.
And this came out right around the time that we both started the video store, yeah.
I don't think this ever got a theatrical. I think it was direct to video.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know.
If it did get a theatrical, it would have been pretty short, like probably festival run type of movie.
Yeah, which is a bit of a shame, because it's not terrible.
No, Prayer of the Roller Boys is a bizarre little concept. Mm-hmm. When you think of post-collapse type of movies. I don't want to say post-apocalypse, because the apocalypse hasn't quite happened, but things have gotten fucking bad.
Mm-hmm. It's timely, too. I mean, when you really think about this is a really timely
This
film.
One absolutely is. This one is it's crazy, like, how prescient it was.
Yes.
Well, when I watched it, I was watching it on YouTube, and it was, at one point, I'm like going, okay, I hope I have the movie and haven't just accidentally clicked on some alt-right channel. Luckily, during the credits, you get the rollerblading in between. So at that point, I was satisfied I had the right thing.
Yeah, because there aren't a lot of right white groups that are on roller skates. But we might be more entertained if they were.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not saying you should do that. Maybe you should just be more groups on roller skates.
Yes.
The inline blades.
Yeah, and it's that's a trend that has certainly fallen by the wayside, which is unfortunate, because it's...
Now it's all like these fucking scooters.
Yeah.
Like, get back. Those are awful.
Yeah, there's that. And I mean, it's a great way to stay fit. And I mean, when I was physically capable of doing it on a regular basis, I used to do quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was fun, and I was never anywhere near as competent or confident as the guys in these films. I was even impressed by how competent our lead actors were in it, mm-hmm. because they obviously practiced it so they could do
a lot of
some
practice.
Basic tricks.
Yeah, Corey Haim did pretty much most of his stunts, like 90% of them.
Nice.
Yeah, I think some of the bigger flips and stuff like that were done by a professional, because you could see when the professional, when they were sort of long shot from the back. But
I mean, this would have been around the time where extreme sports were kind of a big thing on television and stuff. But I mean, you think now with how action movies are, it's like, oh, they would have gone 10 times crazier than they did.
And we're going to.
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Yeah.
So Prayer of the Roller Boys was from 1990, written by W. Peter Iliff, who, believe it or not, we've actually talked about
this dude
before. He wrote episode 36.
Point Break.
Okay, yeah, I didn't get that one, sorry.
Yeah. He also wrote Varsity Blues and Patriot Games. So
two good movies.
Yeah, it's not a bad list.
And you can see his talent in this.
Yeah.
Directed, of course, by Rick King, who also had something to do with Point Break as a writer. Yeah. He co-wrote that. But his next biggest movie that he actually directed was Kickboxer 3.
Yes.
The Art of War. Oh, no.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, I think that probably the biggest flaws in this movie were the directing.
I mean, honestly, I almost feel like they needed, like, some sports guy directing this thing.
Or somebody who's familiar with directing these sports action films. And I kept that in mind when I was picking my director, too, is you want somebody who's really good at big action. Because there isn't a lot of action in this movie, in the grand scheme of things.
No.
No, it's actually quite political.
Yeah.
In its themes, I mean, you think about what's in this movie and compare it to what's in the current American politic climate.
It's now, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you've got an alt-right president who has been accused of racism.
Yeah.
I could see these roller boys being Trump supporters for sure.
Absolutely.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
They would be.
Yeah.
They would be called the roller boys. They'd be called the roller Trumps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the rumps.
Yeah. Nice. Well, rollerblading is good for your ass. So there you go.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's where I spend most of my time when I'm rollerblading.
Yes.
Because my ankles can't handle it.
See, the rollerblading itself was never a problem for me. It was the stopping where I always had a problem.
I had no problem stopping. I aimed for something.
Yeah, something you can grab onto.
Yep.
Yeah, speaking of which, there were several points, I don't know if you noticed this, where they're rollerblading, but they've put in, like, ice skating sounds.
There were some of those.
There were, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the sound design was maybe a little bit weak, too. Yeah,
yeah, when you think of a street gang that's gaining prominence and they're rollerblading, I mean, part of it kind of makes sense, because you've had this economic collapse of America, and it sounds like outside of the cities is even worse than what's inside the cities. And
they moved Harvard to Japan.
Yep.
There you go. So they open up with saying, okay, you spent more than you can afford. You put your country into debt, and the country's foreclosed. That is what happened. And everything sucks. Like, everybody's kind of working for scraps. You might be able to get away with a pizza joint or something like that. But most people are just getting by, and the ones that aren't are scraping for scraps.
Yeah.
Well, and they're also put into camps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's camps. And
homeless
and
camps.
Yeah. And our lead character is living in a tent.
Mm-hmm. Right?
I mean, that's the best accommodation he can find or afford.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the roller boys, the leader of this group, Gary Lee, played by Christopher Collette, he grew up in one of these camps, or at least was sent to one of these camps after his parents had died, much like the lead character in this film, and that's kind of how they know each other. But he's gained a lot of hatred at this point for that, and for foreigners in general who have come in and foreclosed on the country and taken things over.
But ultimately, here's the fun bit in the fact that it does get a lot of this right, where he's talking about, like, all these foreigners came in and foreclosed, but completely ignoring the fact that there was probably this upper level of white America that's completely fine because they kept their money in other areas of the world. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, they were the ones that were completely able to get this whole thing foreclosed on. Like, they're what they did probably to the economy is the problem. And it wasn't completely the foreign money. They sold a bunch of this stuff to all these foreign nationals. Mm-hmm. So that's the root of the problem gets completely ignored because that's his demographic.
Mm-hmm. Ironically, the camps,
he's becoming that demographic.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. Like, the irony and the hypocrisy of a lot of these belief systems is very apparent.
Yeah, absolutely. And to think that this was happening in 1990 when they made this film, that they were predicting all this stuff, and a lot of it's starting to come to pass. We've actually seen countries go bankrupt recently.
Yeah, yes. And we've seen cities like Detroit itself. Mm-hmm. A whole city went bankrupt. The whole thing, it's very prescient. And the fact that it's the apocalypse wasn't a war. It was an economic collapse is very, very intelligent.
So basically what the way I see it is, like, these roller boys it's an easier way to get around the city in general with this alleyways and stuff, because I'm guessing a lot of people can't afford cars, mm-hmm. let alone to drive.
I actually thought there were too many motor vehicles in this.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
That was
I
one thing so they cut too. Down is more bikes.
They should be broken down and just
people would be
relics,
living in them.
Relics of the mm-hmm. past, and people would be living in them. Absolutely. Yeah. Like the fight for over shelter alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was one of the first things I was going to suggest as our part of our remake is fewer vehicles. I love the idea that the pizza guy has a van. It makes it that much more important to him because he has a vehicle to deliver mm-hmm. his pizzas. And then that makes that really fancy, shiny 90s van all the much more impressive because it's brand new.
Yeah.
Right? It just really emphasizes that point.
It shows you how much money these roller boys are making on the streets. They are dealing in a drug called the Mist.
Mm-hmm.
Or Mist.
Yeah, it's called Mist, yeah.
Not The Mist. Yeah. Stephen King book.
Well, it does bring down a whole lot of people, so maybe it is The Mist.
Yeah, yeah, and they have this thing that you see often in the movie, the Day of the Rope, this concept of the rope, which isn't really explained until the end.
Which I think was really great. I liked the fact that you were kept in the dark about it. I mean, I knew what it was because I'd seen the movie back in the 90s, right?
I'd forgotten. I had seen this as well, but I'd forgotten what it was.
Yeah.
And see, what I wondered about that when I heard rope and I was looking at like the context of the movie, I don't know if I'm just putting on like just a higher level on to what the script writing is, but it made me think of that Hitchcock movie called Rope, where it's these two guys who think they are these superior creatures and kill a guy just to prove that they can do it and hide his body in a case where they're serving dinner on later on. So I'm like, I don't know if I'm putting this higher level on it, but like the Superman, then they subscribe to the whole Nietzsche Superman theory.
They do.
So which is what this is.
Yeah. And I would not be surprised given the intelligence of this concept. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't surprise me if that's exactly where it was referenced from.
Yeah.
Way to find something really, really...
I mean, that's
referential there, yeah.
That's
one of
deep,
my favorite
but
movies.
There are certain concepts in there that do apply.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They do feel like that might apply. Well, I'll save what the rope is for a little bit later here.
Yes.
But I couldn't find a trailer that was like audio worthy. There was like one line and then a song that was probably going to get me in shit.
Yeah, there's YouTube. Some Nine Inch Nails in there. And
yes.
Yeah, well, that wasn't actually in that promo. But what I did find, and this is going to be fun because we've never done this on the show before, over 200 episodes, I found the sizzle reel. Now, what a sizzle reel is it's a promotional tool to send to distribution, so distributors, video stores, that sort of thing, to get them interested in buying the product.
Mm.
Because the video stores at the time had to buy the product. They had to buy these VHS to rent, mm-hmm. and they weren't cheap.
No, they were not.
They were like a couple $100
mm-hmm.
to before they were ever made available to the public. So this was a big deal and a big sell. So that's what this is. This is the sizzle reel. You're going to hear a little bit of background talk as well, but it's a fascinating sizzle reel. It's about 3 minutes, 15, 16 seconds. So check it out. This is the sizzle reel for Prayer of the Roller Boys from 1990.
On the streets of the future, a new breed of warrior is rising. A deadly paramilitary gang has taken control, and only one young hero has the courage to stop them.
Roller Boys aren't just another gang. They own buildings, factories, foreign investments. I need someone on the inside. It's not easy. You don't know how easy it is.
Hell, Griffin, I knew it, brother!
Count on this all-star cast to power Prayer of the Roller Boys to rental success. Teen superstar Corey Haim from Lucas, License to Drive, Murphy's Romance, and The Lost Boys comes of age as an actor, as New York Post critic Rex Reed says, his talents don't seem to recognize limitations. Haim is moving into the fast lane, according to People magazine, and millions of teenagers are watching his every move. Patricia Arquette of Far North and Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3 stars as an undercover agent. And Christopher Colley of Firstborn and the Manhattan Project is Rollerboy gang leader Gary Lee. inline skates have taken over the country, and Prayer of the Roller Boys will be fueled by an overwhelming built-in consumer demand thanks to the hottest new fitness trend in this century. Blades are the new rage, and the momentum is staggering. Millions of people are lacing up and blading off. Academy has launched an unrelenting marketing campaign to support Prayer of the Roller Boys, and the kickoff for this 1991 national theatrical release was this August's packed L.A. premiere, where the Roller Boys dazzled the audience on the screen and in person.
When you go see Prayer of the Roller Boys, you can expect to see a lot of mean skating and a lot of fine acting and a lot of action.
Not going to have seen any stunts like this.
It's got a lot of energy and action and also tells a great story.
Kind of like Clockwork Orange meets Blade Runner meets Lord of the Flies.
It's going to be rad. If I were you, get in here and see it.
The action is unbelievable. I don't even know how they filmed it.
It's a 10 on the scale of 1 to 10. 10.
I've already seen it twice. It's a rush.
Dave the Rope.
The reviews are rolling in, and it's 3 stars from the Daily News, and Variety calls Prayer of the Roller Boys blood-pumping entertainment. Be ready for effects like Blade Runner and the style of RoboCop. And the LA Times says, watch out for these guys in the future. You'll see the Roller Boys everywhere you turn when Academy starts our national television advertising campaign on 4 major networks. A national radio promotion, a barrage of print advertising, and full-size theatrical posters and wall window banners will be available for in-store displays. Say your prayers, because Prayer of the Roller Boys is coming to video cassette, exclusively from Academy Entertainment.
Wasn't that awesome?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a couple things I noticed while we're listening to it. One is it did get a theatrical release, but it says 1991, even though it's dated 1990 and all the documents.
Well, that's the production date, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. By the time it probably was released, it was probably really late in the year. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And when the other thing we noticed there was that it's Academy Entertainment, which we know well from working in the video store, tends to not produce films that do really well in theaters or even in video.
Mm-hmm. Right? I couldn't even find a budget for this movie, but it probably wasn't a much.
I thought that film was like around $11 million.
All right, I'll take your word for it. I couldn't find one.
Yeah, I thought I saw it in the wiki page. It was buried in the wiki page. It wasn't up on the software that tells you, but it was buried in the wiki page. It was like mm-hmm. $11 million or something like that, yeah. Which is pretty high for a movie in 1990 this caliber.
Yeah, I'm guessing a lot of that would have gone into set deck and stuff, because mm-hmm. it's not like, well, I guess Corey Haim, I mean, that's a bigger name at the time. It's probably what got this movie distribution in the first place.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sometimes, I mean, a lot of these movies that were made, you need one star to get distribution.
Yeah, and the...
I'm a little worried for that guy who's at the showing, and he's like, Day of the Rope! I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, we know who he voted for when he grew up.
You got the wrong message out of that movie.
it really did.
Yeah, you don't understand it, dude, if that's what you're going for.
Yay, sterilization! Oh, I gave it away.
Which brings up the B plot of this movie is the relationship between Griff and his brother Milty,
mm-hmm.
because there's this whole subtext about addiction in this whole movie. You've got the politics and the whole gang thing, but then there's Gary Lee's always talking about how his guys aren't allowed to use drugs because it's bad, right? And then you have the fact that Griff and Milty's parents had died because his dad was a drunk, and then Milty starts experimenting with the drugs. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and I liked that subplot, right? Because I think it's a really important message there that may have been missed for some people.
Yeah, that addiction that kind of runs in the family.
Well, and it's not even that; it's that addiction and like losing his brother to like just unsavory forces.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had at one point, I'm looking like this is a little bit like American History X on wheels.
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny too when you talk about like how they're he forbids them from using the drugs and gets really irate. And at the whole point, I'm like going, the idea of the Day of the Rope and what its purpose is, I'm like going, it doesn't make much sense if you're like trying to like only the strong don't get the rope. And it's like, well, if you're forcing them not to do it, you're not doing anything. I mean, if they're strong enough, you don't need to.
There is no real day because he is putting this in his drug, the mist. So he's basically sterilizing the lower class.
But if he's forbidding them from doing it, no, you're not saving the strong people. You're just making them not do it. Like, it doesn't make any sense if you think that you're just only saving the super strong people. You're an idiot.
Through their hazing process, I think it, in his mind, in his very psychotic mind, he thinks that because we make them go through this rigmarole to become a member of the Roller Boys, that establishes that they're already strong, right? It's a fallacy.
Oh, well, yeah. And he's saying, the guy says, we've got the morgue full of people who, Roller Boys, who have done mist. So it doesn't work. Like, what he thinks he's doing, like, it's really just, he doesn't get it. He's kind of stupid.
Yeah, he's owned his own little world, and I have a feeling if they were done the mist, they probably didn't die of the mist. They probably died because he shot their ass.
Yes.
Yeah, so he's not doing anything.
He epitomizes that whole right-wing fallacy, a political fallacy that is mm-hmm. left-wingers do it too, is where you put your blinders on. You only believe the parts of your rhetoric that you want to believe, mm-hmm. and you ignore everything else, right? Or deny that it's a problem. You see it happening mm-hmm. right now with Trump is, instead of acknowledging that it is a problem, he said, well, it's false. It's not true. Therefore, it's not mm-hmm. a problem.
Well, and the other thing about it, too, is it's not a problem because it doesn't affect me. And if anybody who looks like me is the problem, well, then obviously it's something else. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the worst part, is like the misidentification of who the problem is.
Bango calls it the final solution. Yeah. Like, they do make the Roller Boys look like Nazi Gestapos on roller skates.
They do.
Which is a fascinating visual.
Yeah, it is. It's funny because there are two references there. There was the black shirt and the tan pants, which is very reminiscent of some of the Nazi look. But you add in the long jacket, and I sort of feel like there was also some homage to Clockwork Orange in there as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The cross with the snake around it, a holy symbol that's been
co-opted.
See, and I thought Cobra Kai at that point.
All right, Prayer of the Roller Boys from 1990 stars Corey Haim as the Stinger. Said he was the hot guy at the time, right?
And he kind of was.
He really was. Yeah. I mean, Lost Boy, Silver Bullets, he was in a ton of big stuff.
Yeah.
Him and the Coreys, like, they could do no wrong even when they were terrible movies. People just liked seeing the Coreys together.
I think at also this point, too, when he was doing this movie, there was a large portion of his life where he was losing work because of his drug addiction at the time.
They'd already separated. And I mean, it's hard to think about it, but he would have only been 19, 20 when he made this movie.
Yeah.
So, like, to be that deep already into drug addiction.
Yeah. Yes. And, I mean, they did do a couple movies together after this as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they were certainly nowhere near as well received as their earlier work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, by that point, it had been tainted by a lot of press in the tabloids mm-hmm. and stuff about what was going on with them. Patricia Arquette, of course, was Casey. She was, as the Stinger said, in Nightmare on Elm Street 3. And a whole lot better.
Yes.
Although I had to, every time she showed up on screen, it was like, it's the only clothing you found, like, in a costume shop?
Yeah. Well,
she was going for an undercover look, obviously.
Yeah, she's like, I don't know, what it was the teen cop show of the 90s. She's kind of like that.
21 Jump Street.
She was like a Jump Street girl. Like, she was really young, but still working for the force.
Well, I just got the idea that they were also going for this whole kind of like club kid vibe, which is costume based.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that explains the Popeye hat.
Yeah.
And I mean, they
and then the cowgirl look.
Yeah. And at the party, you saw that there were other people dressed sort of similarly, right? Like, so it wasn't just
like the idea that, you know, they had to go to costume shops to find clothes. Clothing.
Yeah.
Like, I like that idea.
That's also another part of it, for sure.
Well, and I think you could take that a quite a level deeper in it as well, is because mass production of clothing was probably at a standstill or minimal mm-hmm. for the American public still, because their economy's now gone, mm-hmm. including their industry to this, obviously. They kind of make it clear that most of the stuff they get is imported from Japan. There's the bit there where Gary Lee's trying to buy guns.
Yeah, well, even the mist idea came from China for as a pacification tool.
Yeah, so I think that you could really expand on that and have the way they dress kind of costumey, just because that's what's available is pieces and more used looking clothing.
Well, and if you talk about the pressures of this movie, it's sort of, yeah, the industry wouldn't be here because, like, nowadays you have, like, the massive big superstores, which is all imported from somewhere else.
That's right. Even now, there's most of production, and this is part of the current argument, is
your so sweatshops much production
is out of other countries, typically China.
Because you can pay sweatshop workers low prices, so we get low prices for our clothing and don't think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and that's part of Gary Lee's rhetoric again, is that America didn't support itself.
And that's the whole thing. But again, the people running these companies were doing it because that's the whole thing. And then the American public was buying it because it was cheap and not thinking about it.
Yeah, and alternatively, if it's made locally, then they have to pay more for it. Mm-hmm. And at least in this movie, the economic collapse, nobody can afford to pay more for their material.
So there's an irony there that they're still buying this cheap clothing because it's the only clothing they can afford or get. And it's kind of the way things are now in a lot of cases.
I mean, we see Griffin's kid brother scrounging for like a coffee maker he can sell for cash.
Yeah.
I was always curious too, is what I would probably put into this as well. Like, you know how people donate clothes to other countries. There's other countries that are donating clothes to the U.S.
All right. We kind of got sidetracked when I was doing the cast here. Christopher Collette was Gary Lee. He was in Sleepaway Camp.
And Firstborn with Corey Haim.
Yes, that's right. They had worked together before. Julius Harris was Speedbagger, who I really liked. And we actually have talked about him. He was in episode 78.
King Kong.
That's right. And of course, there was a Bond movie I really like called Live and Let Die.
So yeah, he had a big body of work. I recognized him right away.
Yeah, absolutely. Devin Clark was Milty, the kid brother, who really didn't go on to much else.
Well, no, he's been a very good art director from what I was looking at.
Oh, yeah, as an actor, I meant. Mark Pellegrino was Bango, who I really liked in this movie. He doesn't come into his own until really late in the movie, but I really liked him when they finally gave him some time. He's got a huge body of work. He was a regular on Lost and Supernatural and currently can be seen on 13 Reasons Why.
He's also in Lucifer.
I missed that one.
Who's
I have that? Watched Lucifer as well.
You know,
I don't think he's a reg, is he?
No, he's a guest appearance, but he plays a similar character to, because he plays Lucifer in Supernatural, right?
So it was an in joke.
It was kind of an in joke, yes. But he shows up, and I can't remember if he's one of the demons or. But I remember seeing him in the
cool.
I'll have to look for him.
Yeah, Morgan Weiser was Bullwinkle, and he didn't get a lot of hits, but there was a great little sci-fi show called Space Above and Beyond that was pretty cool, and he was. A regular lead in that, also starring Jake Dengel, G. Smokey Campbell, John P. Connolly, J.C. Quinn, who we actually have talked about.
Yes, we have.
Episode 162.
Chud.
Chud was awesome. And he's also in The Abyss. And that's kind of rounds out the main cast of this movie. A lot of them didn't get much work outside of this movie, at least that last bit.
Most of them are like... I think we're doing double duty on this film, trying to keep the budget down or something, because G. Smokey Robinson, he's production side of things. Like, he's got a huge list of stuff.
And that doesn't surprise me at all. Like, hey, can you skate? Great, you can be in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, he's older. I mean, it's like, well, can you act in like four scenes for us, right? And I mean, you could tell that he was kind of not necessarily an experienced actor.
When you talk about this movie too, like Chris Collette, it took me like half the movie. I'm like, wait, he looks familiar. And I had him misattributed to somebody else because with his haircut, he reminded me of the guy who played Captain Kirk's son in Star Trek. And so I thought that was that actor.
Yes, the guy from Square Pegs. I can't remember his name.
Yes.
And Willie Ames as well. It was another sort of like, hey, look, it's Willie Ames. And I always mixed these two up because I really liked Firstborn. I thought it was one of those really great movies that didn't get a fair shake. And so I was really excited to see him in this because I thought he was really good in that. He is really good in this too. He was really talented. And it's a shame that he didn't do more because he did do some more stuff. Yeah, that's right. but more, like ending up in like B stuff, like Silk Stockings and stuff like that, which is where he met his wife. So maybe that was a good thing
there
for
you
him.
Go.
But now they're Pilates instructors.
Hey. Okay, whatever pays the bills.
Yep. He might be making some of the bodies we're seeing on film today.
Yeah, quite possibly.
So there you go.
But yeah,
it's funny when you meet somebody on Silk Stockings, so you basically saw her naked before you started dating.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, that's the best window shopping ever.
That's the basis of an entire British TV show called Naked Attraction, where they have these people behind blinds and they open it up like a little bit to the knees and they're like, well, who do you like? And then who do you let go? And then the poor person who gets let go first, like they're naked under there. They're taken up and then they're like, oh, okay, goodbye. Like it was really nice to be here. And then they put it up and like, then you see like just a bunch of dicks or whatever. Just looking at you. And they're like, okay, which penis appeals to me? And they do it. I don't know if they do it with women too, but yeah, it's really odd.
Well, there's another one called Naked Island as well. Where they
Naked and Afraid?
It's a dating show.
Oh,
where
well,
they have to go on their dates naked.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry, we're
yeah. I'm gonna go back to the rollerblades because I'm already.
You brought up the nakedness, but just so you know, this is not the weird thing.
I don't want to segue into nude game shows too much.
It's bonkers.
But yeah,
watch one to see what it's about, and then never watch again.
I'm just gonna go with never watch.
There was
again.
A Japanese one I saw.
Oh really?
Oh,
okay, dude. Maybe that's where they got the idea.
No, and I'm not gonna describe it. It gets worse than that.
What people will. Man. Okay, anyway, talk about the downfall of society. This is what they should have. We should have that in this movie where they show the downfall of society with all the shit that's on television.
Yeah, with quote-unquote reality television.
Yeah, like the naked dating show. Yeah, there we go. Got it.
So, basically Griffin, he's working for this guy, Pinky, delivering pizzas, and shit happens that day. Mm-hmm. He kind of had a bad day and delivered some pizzas. And then there was a big fire and somebody was like, help, 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 get me out.
Yeah.
So he backed his boss's van into the house to get him out. And that man was Bullwinkle, a member of the Roller Boys.
Yep.
And this was their Mist house. This is where they were distributing or producing
Making,
Mist.
Yeah.
And they were hit by a rival gang who were the B-13ers, which I kind of like because that goes to a difference. Movie that's Trish and I like was like District 13.
Yes.
Wasn't originally B-13?
Balliol 13.
Yeah, and that's all.
And it was about B-13.
Parkour. It's a parkour action movie.
But it's also about encompassing and removing the lower class, the lower earning people, mm-hmm. the poor, from the rest of society just because they don't want to deal with it.
Which is very similar to this.
Yeah, and I think it came later, so
it
did come way later.
2005?
So. Yeah, so it's interesting that that's a thing, and there are B-13ers in here that have a very similar plot to device to it. So I'm like, this is kind of neat. So yeah, they were hit by, and Bullwinkle's been freed, and that's puts Griffin in a place of, with the Roller Boys of privilege, and also makes people mistake him for one of them.
Yes.
Yep.
Right. And also reconnection with Gary Lee, who he was childhood friends with.
They were neighbors.
They were neighbors, yes.
Yeah. And they were both put in the camps around the same time when the crash happened and their parents died.
Yeah, no, I think they established that they had moved away before Griffin and his family moved away before the crash.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right. And he came back to California after his parents died because it was warm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that was the whole rationale.
Yep. Which is also why they didn't want to go somewhere else. And the kid complains at the end, it's going to be cold out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Meanwhile, Patricia or Cat Casey's already embedded within the Roller Boy community. She's not really like, she's not that one of them.
She's a hanger on. Yeah.
She's a kind of a groupie. She's made to look like a drug addict. We never actually see her doing Mist, but the assumption at the beginning of the movie is she's a heavy user. She actually goes to Griffin at one point looking for drugs.
But so, I think that point was
to make contact and see where he was.
Mm-hmm.
And he does not view these people favorably.
No, he does not. He's very reluctant to be at all involved with them. Right. And he's going so far as to go get Milty from one of their events because he doesn't want them involved.
Right? Mm-hmm.
He's actually a very good brother. He's taken on that parental role and he takes it very seriously. He's not equipped to do it very well.
Yeah,
no.
But he tries very, very hard.
Yeah, he's kind of forced into that role when the cops come to him. and say, hey, yeah, we need you in there. And seeing the influence the Roller Boys are already having on Milty,
yeah.
because, hey, we're in with the Roller Boys now, and they're protecting them, and yep. they're doing stuff for them.
They're covering Griffin's yeah. debts with the damaged van. They're trying really hard to sway Griff into joining them.
Mm-hmm. And it's
cult
also
mentality.
Cult and like the terrorist cells, like how they entice people yeah. mm-hmm. to get in. We will take care of you. You will be one of us. You're very special, quote unquote.
Yeah. Even like just the gangs of New York and LA yeah. and stuff. Mm-hmm. They start with the kids young.
Yeah. And when they even mentioned that specifically.
They yes. use children as dealers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they can't do too much to them.
Including Milty.
And that's when Griffin's like, okay, yeah, fine, fuck yeah, it. Let's yeah. take these assholes down yeah. because they're fucking with my little brother and turning him yeah. into an asshole.
And this
yeah.
is like the American History X part of it as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it is. And I mean, there's the manipulation aspect of it too. Is Gary Lee doesn't really give a shit about Milty.
No,
he just manipulating because he wants Griff.
Yeah, you get the feeling they were really close.
Yeah.
at one point, and you see that when they're taking the tour of his mm-hmm. shipping yard. Oh, I even have freighters. One day I'll yeah. learn how to use them.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then they have their little race, and it's like, it shows you how much they still are children.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Like, just forced to live in this rough world, and Gary Lee's found a way by being this weird cult slash gang mm-hmm. leader.
There is a line, too, where he says, my people are very loyal, and I'm like, man, I wish there would have been, like, a line who's like, to you or your cause? Because that's a big question. It's like going, yeah, once we remove you from what you're saying, would they be?
Mm-hmm.
And what is the point? Like, I mean, if you did something that was wrong or they thought was against the cause, how quickly mm-hmm. would they turn on you?
Yeah.
And I love the fact that he's so charismatic. Because, I mean, that's mm-hmm. really a key factor in these particular types of groups where, mm-hmm. where you have this very charismatic leader who has a vision, twisted or not.
Yeah, and the Roller mm-hmm. Boys really respect that vision in that person yeah. because there's tension between Bullwinkle and mainly from Griffin because he's just not nice to this dude he rescued.
Yeah.
And you'd think they'd be a little more friendly with each other. And initially, Bullwinkle tries. And then, yeah. once it's like, nah, we're just not going to get along. And it's weird because Bango starts out the opposite. He's going to have a fight with Griffin at one point, yep. and Bullwinkle keeps that from happening. And then later, Bango and Griffin get mm-hmm. all chummy.
Yes.
Yeah. It's partly, I think, because he's sort of like, I say, maybe Griffin, now he knows what type of person Bullwinkle is. Like, yeah, I'm kind of regretful I saved your life. Like, he doesn't care. He's like, I know what you are. And I think
I didn't know you were a Roller Boy at the time. If I'd known, I would have let you fucking burn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also kind of, it's weird where with him and Gary Lee, it's probably because he knew him as a kid and now he's seen what he's become. There's even more disdain there, mm-hmm. you know, because like if you see somebody that you knew when you were younger and they've just become something so reprehensible to you,
yeah.
that would you would hate them more somehow yeah. as if you
and
didn't know them.
And successful at it. Like he, you know, here's this representation of the new rich and this terrible, hateful person
mm-hmm.
who is literally trying to sterilize the lower end of the population and
the most vulnerable part of the population.
Yeah. And at one point, they actually, another part of, to prove Griffin's loyalty
yeah.
was when they grabbed Speedbagger, a mm-hmm. friend of Milty and Griffin.
The father figure.
The father yeah. figure. You know, he was the replacement father figure, and he worked on bikes and skates and things like that. And
taught them how to box.
Skateboards. And, yeah, taught them how to survive in this world.
Their tent is on at his place yeah. because
and
he lets
them
stay there.
Yeah, they hood him and beat the shit out of this poor guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ultimately what made Milty turn on the Roller Boys, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, if they did that to him.
What are they going to do to me?
And
anybody
and
else.
It's because he was black.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The racism is a very important thing. And that actually made casting really tough. Yeah.
Well, and this is why my casting is the way it is. I'm like, it's got to be this way because
an important theme in the film.
Yeah. Right.
Like the sense of entitlement.
It is the uncomfortable part of what this is.
And it's also the kind of like that whole beating him up scene. It's that whole like rabid dog people getting carried away with things because they think they can and they have all these people around them who are doing it. Like some of the most reprehensible instincts people can have, they feel justified in doing because they're surrounded by other people doing it.
Mm-hmm. And they feel invincible because
they've got all those people.
Because they've got all those people, yeah. And because they've been getting away with it.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm surprised Gary Lee gets the loyalty he has, especially with that initiation.
Mm-hmm.
He's showing how disposable these people actually are.
Yeah.
So it's a race between three people, and only one gets the ride home. That's how he pitches it.
Yeah.
Now, one shot by they're entering this secure zone, and the mission is to get one of the ID cards off of these guys. And what it really is a distraction. They are stealing guns from a gun supplier they're already using, but they're stealing them, you know,
because
why
pay
for them?
Yeah.
So there's...
Gary Lee actually says, I tried to buy them.
Yeah, I tried to buy them. And so he couldn't make a deal. And while these guys are racing through the compound for this thing they don't even need, they're getting shot at. One of them dies right away. The other two are trying to kill each other along the way to be that last guy. And they both are going to cross the finish line, and Gary Lee shoots the guy who's just a little further back in the race because he's not going to get there first. And he would have been a good soldier because he was clearly had enough skills to do it.
And
he was cutthroat enough. He wanted his friend to win.
But it just shows how cold Gary Lee is as well, right? He's like, rules are rules. Right? If it had been you, I would have shot you. He basically says it without saying it.
Rules are rules for everybody but him. Like, that's the whole point of
he
being a leader.
He said only one gets a ride home. He didn't say he was going to murder the other one.
That was also what bothered me, too. If I were writing, like, again, remaking this, and be like going, I would bring that up. It'd be like, you just said that. I don't quite get what your deal is.
Yeah, but I mean, partly to establish how cold Gary Lee is and how rigid he is in the structure of this organization. And I think that using the use of the roller boys, I think you're right, is it's a convenient way to get around town or around the city. And it looks stunning on film when they're all in sync. It looks amazing.
Yeah, there's a presence to it when they're a group.
Yeah.
And even when they're not, and there's just a couple of them and shaking down the neighborhood businesses.
Yeah.
They're easily spotted. They're easily seen. And
but
there's either respect or fear on those streets.
Yeah.
I'm just the weird one, though. They were all skating together. It looked a little silly to me.
This movie is inherently silly in its idea.
I think it's because it's rollerblading that it looks silly, but I don't know why. It does look silly.
What's that? I'm trying to remember that post-apocalyptic, like, it's a Mad Max on BMX.
Oh.
Remember, I watched that a couple years ago for 31 Days of Horror.
I can't remember
me, which sucks because it's actually really good.
You'll remember it after.
Probably, but that's kind of the vibe I'm going for in this one.
Yeah.
There's lots of great stuff in here. I mean, I think really...
Turbo Kid.
Okay, yes.
I didn't have to wait for like an hour later.
There we go. We remembered. Or Jay remembered. Yeah, but I think like amping up the inline skating action to make...
Yes.
Right, needs to happen for sure.
Well, and I'd like to go to the B-13 movie mixing like inline skating with like a parkour aesthetic.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, to a certain extent, that's where the extreme inline skating has gone.
That's where your action movie elements are going to come from anyway.
Really amping it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I have to say, the one point, too, where I thought real action was happening is when they both go up those stairs with skates on. I'm like going, to me, that was just amazing because I couldn't comprehend how somebody could do that.
Yeah, and me either. I'm like, holy smokes, that's really impressive because I've tried.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see like some cool skating moves with the parkour and maybe some martial arts involved. I'm like, that would be really sweet.
Yes.
Like, what if like on the side of the skates, maybe there's some blades or something they can do like a side kick with one leg while the other one's actually keeping their balance and while they're moving with them at momentum. Oh my God.
Yeah. There's lots of the really interesting stuff you could do with this. I mean, this movie was a little bit ahead of its time because inline skating really wasn't even taking off just yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't for another couple of years where it became the phenomenon that it was.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they were a little bit ahead of their time and certainly I don't think they had quite
some impressive stuff in there for 1990, I mean, considering what we've seen now, it doesn't look like much now.
It's almost on the level of skateboarding in terms of the different styles of tricks with the rail sliding and the and really using the environment as part of your activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I'd expand the industrial landscape with like sort of a lot more concrete, but like crazy stuff that they could go in and around and about.
Oh God, like why if they had this whole harbor to themselves, why weren't they all over the place practicing out there?
Exactly. I
you never see them working it.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'd almost get rid of the skate park that they spend the movie starts in.
If you're making foot soldiers, you should be training them.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, if you're gonna be part of the gang, you have to be the best.
Like make that, use of this.
It shouldn't be looking like this small gang that is known citywide and is making broadcasts. He has a big reach, but it's like 10 guys. Like there should be a fucking army in there.
Yes. You know what I thought would be fun, and it just occurred to me.
You think 10 guys going in sick? Do it with a few thousand.
Yeah.
A bunch of them, but like, have them be training on like a bunch of modern art pieces that they just happen to have because everything's collapsed and they just took them.
I can see him grabbing anything that was of value in the old world.
And some of this modern art would be great to practice on, like with all the curves and everything.
I think you're right. I think that as part of that indoctrination, you need to see sort of the training process and the rigidity of the group. And the expectation is that they are
They wouldn't consider Griffin if he wasn't already a good skater. Yeah. So we should actually see that he can qualify with that and actually work within that group and not be one of that head group. Like, they all rotate in the drug lab. I'm like, nah, this is menial shit. You guys shouldn't be doing this. Like, you can see how much you almost think like the reach is too big for their skills and their level of crime. Like, this feels like Breaking Bad, where it's just getting out of hand too quickly.
I wrote this down. Breaking Bad on wheels as well.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I understood the rationale between having trusted people working the mist.
Yeah, only doing that.
The mist truck, whatever, the mist lab.
Yeah.
Because you need people you can trust with the day of the rope. I don't see the entire gang knowing what the day of the rope actually is.
You get bums in their underwear, all doing one piece of the sequence, not knowing what they're doing.
Yeah.
This is your measurement. This is what you put in there.
I know. I kept thinking
that. Don't play with the acid bath.
Yeah. Oh, well, when I was watching the whole thing, I kept looking at going like, they're a little half-assed with their measurements. Yeah. I need something a little more precise.
I'm guessing the scoop was fill the scoop.
Yeah, but even then, it's not. Yeah, no.
No, it's not very.
I would have it like you have to have like so many grams, and they're using a scale.
This is chemistry.
This is Yeah, exactly. You can't just half-ass it.
It's not a cup of this and a cup of this. It's.
Yeah, you're not making a cake.
Yeah, I mean, they went to the lab because it looked cool.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They didn't really give a shit if it was actually good science.
No.
Well, no,
I mean, I mean, like the hydrochloric acid was there to wash the lines if they got raided.
Yeah.
Just flip a switch and everything just melts away.
Yeah, but like I say, you can still zhuzh it up with the science and still make it look cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think they can. I actually kind of like the way direction Jay was going is they are the manufacturer of the mist is also part of the economy, where you have people working there in their underwear, right? So they can't take anything.
I mean, we do see, like, there are some good things that they do. They're providing their community.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, the white community.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are providing meals.
To get the young. Like, yeah, I mean, like how they put that
in there. A lot of it is indoctrination, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, give this kid a little extra. He does good work or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they're feeding the community. They hand out comic books to the kids. They really are trying to get the young.
Their own comic books. I loved that.
Yeah.
Like, that, you were talking about propaganda.
That's
like some genius writing just to fit that in there.
I mean, if you're trying to get the young, that's your Fox News right
comic
there.
Comic books, yeah. Like comic books of the Roller Boys. Like pitching yourself as heroes and giving it to these kids, of course.
Yeah, it was so well thought out. Like there's so much in this movie that was really well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, that's where I think the director kind of failed, is he didn't take that source material and do as much with it as he could have.
Yeah, I don't think he quite had the skill to execute that script. I mean, especially considering what that guy's delivered since.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, you are working under the limitations of, you know, what you can get together. Like you're saying, doing double duty, doing other stuff.
Yeah.
With more of a budget, he probably could have.
Yeah, I envision this a little more Turbo Kid's first Mad Max, because there still is a law structure there.
Yeah.
And you have the corrupt cops, just like Mad Max did. And these cops that are tailing Griffin are also corrupt. They just wanted to get into the lab so they can grab steal the cash or steal the business themselves.
And as you referenced, like District 13, where there's a whole scene where they're just closing down the police station because they don't they can't afford to pay for it, and who cares about these people? Mm-hmm. I mean, that could be in there,
yeah,
too.
That's ultimately what happened to Max. He was a cop, mm-hmm. and inevitably it all collapsed. So yeah. he took what he could and hit the road. And yep. this is kind of, we're seeing what's happening in the city. I almost envision this the same world, the people that stayed in the cities mm-hmm. rather than go out into the open road and the smaller towns and how they're surviving. You kind of see that. So, you know, this is a neat idea of the people who stayed in the cities right. and surviving with what they can, with clothing that they can find. And that's why it's so weird.
Yeah. and certainly, yeah, I don't see them dressed in what modern day clothing anymore. Like, I mean, it's pieces of it and stuff manufactured out of other scraps, just like,
yeah.
like there's, you're right. So there should be some of that sort of Mad Max scavenger aesthetic in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, just, yeah. Hot hockey jerseys and like old stuff, like stuff that wouldn't
Things
happen.
Are versatile and strong.
Yeah. And it's also, it would be good to have like a hockey jersey where it's a reference where people don't understand what it was.
Well, I don't think we're that far from removed from the collapse, though. When you think
true,
about it,
it's been
within the last decade that this collapse has happened, right?
But you could have all the people's like going, "Whatever happened to the guy who used to wear that? The yeah. name of that guy yeah. is like, oh no, he's still rich somewhere."
Yeah, and the other thing I'd want to do in this, which we didn't really do, you saw it once or twice where you saw people with money coming mm-hmm. to buy mist. I would like to see more of what happens, these people with wealth, like with wealth that Trish was sort of talking about is they're still there, right?
Yes.
And they're still living high on the hog. They're getting Kobe beef and tuna and fresh vegetables from other
and
parts of the world.
And mist getting sterilized mm-hmm. because, yeah. hey, your line of
it feels good.
They can afford it. It feels good. But at the end of the day, Gary Lee gets what he wants because their line will end.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's certainly.
But I also kind of want it where I think I want an alternate mist as well.
And he's putting even the wealthy under his thumb.
Yes. And yeah, see more of sort of, because they do a really good job of showing sort of how he's a corporation.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Especially at the
yeah.
end.
Oh, yeah. Especially, yeah, because he survives this movie but he's got a very nice jail cell with a lawyer who's just, he's working his business from the inside now.
And I love the fact that he's still a bit of a juvenile because he's spray painting the walls and all that stuff. I love that.
I have to say, there was one mural I saw at a certain point and where it's Gary Lee and like he's got the arms up, but there's like a black thing in front of him. And I was like going, it really just looks like he's got a bustier and he's just being coquettish. That whole time, ooh. That's what it looked like. Gary Lee wearing a bustier. That's what I saw.
This must have been a very sweaty set to be on.
It was. But I mean, like, yeah, like I do want the wealthy coming in there, but I do also like it. I do want to really have at least a part of it where Gary Lee totally doesn't understand that they are also part of the like he doesn't.
But he does. He even says it in the movie. He understands
they
that the
sold
wealthy,
him. But I mean, he still thinks it's the foreigners that are the worst part of it.
Oh, for sure. His ire is clearly aimed at the mm-hmm. people who bought his country. But he also knows who's responsible for the sale of it because he says it outright to Griffin. He says, mm-hmm. our parents and their generation let us down.
Yeah. So, they borrowed more than they could pay back.
Yeah, but I mean, these people that are rich didn't borrow more than they could pay back.
Yeah, so he doesn't like the rich. He doesn't like anybody who's not American, essentially.
Yes. Yeah, but I mean, these rich are American.
Yeah. But
I think we have to kind of get, sorry, the hypocrisy is like, I'm getting like he hates the rich, but I'm just worried that we're going to get more people coming in. Day of the Rope, like the sympathy towards somebody like him because...
Well, part of that is the propaganda in the first place.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to have the propaganda to get people on his side.
Right.
And you start speaking to what people have seen and experienced.
But right now, it's
and that
sort
anger
of...
that's already kind of inherent in them and grabbing onto that. That's what he's doing.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, like nowadays when we talk about the alt-right too, like it's the anger, but again, their misunderstanding problem. Like
of
it's sort of the people who are really at fault are the ones they put into power in the first place.
This entire country's lives have collapsed because of failed bureaucracy and mishandling and having the populace be giving them the tools to self-destruct.
Yeah. And I think that Gary Lee still recognizes this, but he also uses the rich. That's the contradiction of
Gary Lee. I mean, if he cared about them, he wouldn't sell to them.
Yeah. Right. So he's using
them just as much as he uses anybody else. Yeah. So I'm like, you can get me this and you can get me that.
Yeah.
And you can get me these guns.
Right. Which he does. I mean, he even deals with the Japanese at one point in the movie to buy guns, right? So I think that he believes that everybody serves a purpose, but once that purpose is served,
they have no value,
and you can do the mist and we'll have to get rid of
it. Because they're not him.
They're not roller boys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's all he really cares about is his roller boys.
Yeah. And I think that theme works really well, and I'd like to merge that with a little more Mad Max. Because, this is still...
I don't want it too post-apocalyptic.
Because, like I said, it's the city version. I mean, it looks really 90s.
Yeah, it
like
does.
Late 80s, early 90s, and it's aesthetic. And I think if you start looking at these smaller communities that have formed within these cities, and it's not just the B-13ers. Well, part of the problem is we don't see the B-13ers. We just assume they're the black gang.
You do a little bit...
Because there's that scene where Griff catches Milty selling drugs, and then they pull up and they shoot up that cafe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the B-13ers.
And then there's another part where they do an attack on them.
You don't know what there's about. You do see the attack on their camp at one point as well.
So yeah, but you don't see
this is like warriors on rollerblades.
Because you're not full. Yeah, but yeah, you need to have more of what these other gangs are to really.
Yeah, and I can see maybe Griffin using that to his advantage in a way.
I'd like to see it as making it tough, because, I mean, they do talk about having their own turf and, like, trying to expand, and seeing some of that struggle with expansion, I think, would be interesting to look at as well.
Well, and they touch base on it, because that first scene where he rescues Bullwinkle, everybody blames it on the B-13ers, right, because they're fighting over that turf. And I think that's, you're right, I think that needs to be sort of a broader scope is that the B-13ers are the other sort of established gang in this community, and there's conflict.
Well, what if we say like the B-13ers as a gang structure? I mean, there's always a little bit of structure here, but they're well-meaning in what they are. They're survivors, and they are in a lot of ways organized protection for those who can't. That would be an interesting idea, where these almost are the good guys and the cops are just kind of, well, we can't really do fuck all.
Yeah.
So they're caught in the middle seeing, well, I mean, if we use our authority and what little ammunition and things that we have, they're just to take.
They're almost like a private police force almost. I kind of see where you're going.
Yeah.
Right. So they're blowing up of mist houses is to keep the drugs off the street.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And they're there to protect the minority groups that are being targeted by the roller boys.
Yes. Yeah.
I like that.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like that very much.
And if anything, like this Donnie Brasco aspect with the cops, like they're just there under their thumb too. Like that's why do you think Gary Lee had such a nice sell at the end?
Yep.
Like, these two guys sure burst in on the lab and then get shot, but it wasn't the other cops that did it.
And I want to think, too, there's the thing where, I want to also have this theme where it's like having the money, it doesn't, like, you're corrupted and you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
And you don't care about anybody else. You can just do whatever you want because money... does whatever you
want. What if this is another game that Gary Lee's playing? Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, well, I want my friend here and I'm having trouble getting him over here. So if I can get him embedded and think he's working for the law, which doesn't do fuck all anyway, then the law is actually putting him in a place where he's in there and he can start enjoying the aspects of being a roller boy, the advantages that come with it.
I think that undermines the entire story to a certain extent, though.
We don't, but I don't want to make the cops serve no purpose.
You know what? They serve no purpose, but here's what you don't need.
It just turns into a regular cop story.
It does, but again, they serve no purpose, but we already have the purpose. We already have Milty.
Yeah.
We'd have him just join simply because he's worried about Milty. Mm-hmm. You don't need the cops at all.
That's why I want the B-13ers to be a more of a sympathetic group.
True.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Yeah, like, so we just have it. Milty is the entire motivation.
He absolutely
Why not just keep it
is.
As that? We don't need the cops.
Yeah. Well, you have that driving force, right? But who's backing up Griffin at the end? That's the question. So I see where you're going with the B-13ers, mm-hmm. kind mm-hmm. of doing that.
Well, I still want Casey to be non-corrupt.
And I see that coming from Speedbagger. You know, he wasn't just a father figure mm-hmm. to Griffin. You know, he could have been like the original B-13er, like before.
He's an OG, yeah.
He's
yeah.
OG. So when something happens to him, then it's a big mm-hmm. deal. And that could get Griffin, that could be interesting in and of itself, where Griffin's caught in the middle and they have to go, hey, wait a minute, if you're rolling with them, but you betrayed your father figure, like, whose side are you actually on?
Yeah, yeah.
So there could be like that nice middle ground where everybody hates poor Griffin.
Yeah, yeah. Because we could have, like, where Speedbagger is that type of guy who doesn't care who comes into his shop.
Yeah, that should be a later reveal.
He helps
yeah.
everybody.
Yeah.
Because that's how he rolls.
Yeah. I mean, and Griffin has to earn that trust of the B-13ers.
So he has to earn the trust of everybody.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting position to put him in. I kind of
yeah.
like it.
Oh, yeah. No, he's rock, hard place.
Yeah. But I don't see, yeah. I don't see Gary Lee knowing what Griff is really in there for. I
yeah.
really don't.
Okay.
Because that betrayal at the end really has to come as a shock to, yeah. to Gary Lee, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, and that's the Donnie Brasco yeah. aspect of it, I
yeah.
guess.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, after...
I do like the idea of seeing him starting to enjoy it. And
yeah.
when he sees the effect of that, and then that's, again, what happens to Speedbagger, and he probably should die. They didn't kill anybody in this movie.
No.
But he should probably die.
Well, no key characters. They killed Bullwinkle. They killed...
Yeah. Well, okay, yeah. yeah. I mean, none of the good people.
Yeah.
No.
yeah.
Yeah, it's yeah, gotta be...
I think that
the reveal still needs to be a shock to yeah. him, because he's gotta
yeah,
believe...
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be involved at the beginning.
And I think that Speedbagger not knowing what Griffin's actually doing mm-hmm. was an important part of the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Right, is that disappointment that Speedbagger has for him
mm-hmm.
kind of is part of what motivates Griffin mm-hmm. in the end there is, well, I need to show a Speedbagger that I wasn't really a ruler boy. I wasn't really a yeah. bad guy. I was doing something to help mm-hmm. Milty and help bring down these evil people.
And I like the idea of where he can't tell him why he's doing yeah. what he's doing.
And I like the idea that Gary Lee thinks he's so in control of this, he doesn't realize that the death of this guy is going to cause a gang war.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're already at odds. But.
Well, he thinks he's indestructible. I think it would be like he thinks he can do whatever he wants and mm-hmm. he just goes too far. Like he thinks he's indestructible at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he didn't realize.
Yeah, I mean, what if we just keep the cops out of it in general?
I think the cops need to be there just because I think having the corrupt cops really emphasizes how powerless they really are. Is they're really only there to serve their own purposes. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of that lieutenant who still has that moral compass. But he's really can't do anything with it until he pairs up with the B-13ers,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's because you need some sort of contact. I mean, mm-hmm. you have Casey, right, as the sort of mole.
Because yeah, I never understood, like, they didn't want the lab destroyed, so they had evidence to put Gary Lee away.
Mm-hmm.
But who cares? If it's gone, it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't quite understand that, and especially in a world that collapsed, and he's going to live like a fucking king in jail anyway. Who gives a fuck if
it's
attacked?
They wanted to bring the roller boys down. They wanted to stop
You blow up the fucking yard.
But see, that's the
whole... you destroy the entire... I mean, especially we're going to have, like, an army of them. You blow that shit up.
But strangely, here's the whole point of it, is... I liked that ending and the fact that it's like, no, we've tried numerous times throughout human history to try and put like an end to a lot of this bullshit, and we mm-hmm. fail every time. So the ending has to be like this because we will continuously fail because of human mm-hmm. nature. We are selfish, horrible creatures, and we'll always be that way.
Okay, I'll just put the soapbox over here. And here's an ending. We could still have the lab and the whole bit and the cops coming in, but they don't have much of a force. And then there's a big idea. Like, we have two tankers sitting right mm-hmm. out there that didn't know what to do, full of fucking oil that could make a big-ass boom, because they're not going to take out that whole fucking army.
Well, that's where the B-13s mm-hmm. come in.
Well, I know. You can have a big fight, but say they're losing.
But yeah, like, yeah, the B-13ers could be the ones who do blow it up.
Or maybe it is the B-13ers and not Griff. That does seem a little violent for Griff.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, he has to be off going up against Gary
Lee.
Because
you can't just take out the drug thing. You got to take out the men.
Yeah.
You got to take out that whole organization.
Yeah.
But with Griffin, like,
and
you
we're making
do
it
need...
larger, too. You're right. Mm-hmm. We're making it much larger.
And you got to make it bigger.
Yeah.
You have to make it bigger.
Make it bigger. But, yeah, like, Griffin can't do it because he's off fighting Gary Lee at a point. Like, this is the other battle.
Yeah, you still
happening.
Have to have the boss battle.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, the boss battle is them. And then, like you say, the tankers is the other battle.
The complete obliteration.
Now I wish I would have cast some B-13ers.
I know.
Because they're important now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you have this organization and this strategy of like, okay, we go in there, we keep these men busy, you guys plant this fucking C4 and those big old ships over there.
Yeah, I like the idea of making the B-13ers a more of a plot point. And yeah, you have, like I said, I like the idea of having that one cop who really still believes in the law, mm-hmm. right? But he knows that that law enforcement is not working the way it is anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So he works with the B-13ers.
Mm-hmm.
You need that adult with the right vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's not the law he wants, but
it's the law that works.
It is at least something better than what's happening.
But I do want him to have some of this tension with the B-13ers where he's like going, I do believe in the rule of law. Like, you got, like, if they do something,
mm-hmm.
I want him to be like, you guys, there's some stuff you gotta calm down. Like,
it'll be like, if you do this, not getting the lab, you're not getting the formulas.
No.
This isn't about you taking control.
Yeah, he's like, you guys, you have to understand that, like, some of the stuff you do is just going to contribute to lawlessness. Yeah.
Well, and I think that needs to be things like blowing up the drug houses. It's like, you need to stop the explosions, right?
Yes.
Because they don't want the drugs. I think that they want to keep them off the streets.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
These guys are good guys. They're not in it for personal motive.
But he could have the guys like going, okay, I know you guys want these out and killing him, but starting a fire spreads. So maybe think about that.
Yeah,
you guys aren't protecting anybody by starting a fire.
Shooting people that you think are on your side, but maybe not. Like, you're hurting innocent people much as helping them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a great scene in the movie, actually, where they accidentally or unintentionally partially motivate Griff to join the Roller Boys because they already assume he's one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The cafe gunshot scene where he's running, mm-hmm.
running
from them, right? So I think that that's a really good point is that's how Griffin comes in, is he says, well, now these B-13ers are after me, even though I'm not doing anything,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm not a roller boy, and they're after me. So what do we need to do? And then he says, yeah, I can get the B-13ers off your back.
Well, his involvement with the death of Speedbagger would even be worse.
Yeah. In the end, but that happens much later in the film,
it does,
right?
Yeah.
And so you have to get that motivation.
I'd like to see him maybe that there is some communication happening between them and some trust is forming, and then that happens, and then all lines of communication with Griffin are done.
Yeah.
And now he's just as bad as the enemy. So he, you know, when he has to face down Gary Lee, that's his proving point. Like, at that point, if they don't see him taking down Gary Lee, he's going down with Gary mm-hmm. Lee.
I can get behind that. Yeah. I do.
Ooh. And you could have, like, the cop figure be the one person he's like going, guys, just like, because he's probably talking maybe some of them down. He's like, leave him until he's done what he's doing.
Yeah. In fact, yeah, this could still play to Griffin and his better nature because he doesn't want to stoop to their level. So he doesn't kill Gary Lee.
No.
But he hands him off to the B-13ers. It's mm-hmm. like, told you I wasn't a fucking roller boy.
Yeah.
Here's my present.
Yes.
Now you all can fuck off.
Yeah. He needs that redemption arc.
Yeah.
Because
he didn't want to be one of them either.
No.
He's like,
he just wanted to be left alone.
Yeah. I just want to be left alone.
I want my brother left alone.
Here's Gary Lee. This is what I want. Now the rest of you, I don't want to ever see any of you ever again.
Yeah. I'm going to go someplace. I'm going to live peacefully. That's all I want right now.
Yeah. Oh, he's got an RV now.
Yeah. He's like going, I'm going to take my kid brother away from all the drugs. I want to get him an education. That's just what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked the idea that part there where he was kind of drawn in by all the stuff that he could do as a roller boy.
Sure.
Right? And getting the new RV and stuff like that. And not realizing how insidious it was.
Yeah, no, they make a good sell. They have these mm-hmm. wild party orgy things mm-hmm. and they're feeding the community. There's a lot of things they show that are good things to Griffin, not showing him the bad stuff. They're like making themselves. They do a really good sell.
They do a really mm-hmm. good sell, and yeah, he doesn't even realize how sucked in he's starting to get.
Yeah,
right. That's the beauty of that scene is he just really doesn't realize that he's crossing lines there.
Yeah,
right. He's like, well, I have to do this to fit in, but then he also sort of that pride in it to mm-hmm. Speedbagger, and then Speedbagger says, well, you can't park it here anymore because there's no.
Yeah,
I don't like who you're becoming.
Yeah, well, and it also makes him look like he's connected to the Roller Boys, and if he's an OG B-13er that we've made him, I can see where that would be a problem.
Yes.
And, yeah, and the whole thing is like Speedbagger, you could have that sort of moment where he's like going, this is how it starts.
Yeah.
The fact that like he could be that fatherly moment is like, you don't understand how slowly this creeps in. Mm-hmm. You got to pay attention, kid.
Yeah, and he's being shaken down by the Roller Boys just as much as anybody else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We saw that too.
Yeah, we do see that.
When it was Bullwinkle and Bango,
we still have this the basic structure of the story.
And, yeah.
But I think that I hate to say it because I really liked Speedbagger, but I think he does have to die to really make that impactful, right?
Yeah, and I thought that was a big problem there. It was like, okay,
they chickened
mm-hmm. out. Yeah, it does feel in some ways made for TV.
Yeah, and I mean it's what it does too, like it has to really, really break Griffin. And I mean, the other thing about it too is what that ending would mean if he dies is Griffin's like, I have to spend the rest of my life making up for something horrible that I did. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I fell in.
That I participated.
And I participated, mm-hmm. and like, I've done something terrible. Like, can you imagine the guilt and the grief?
Oh, yeah, it'd be awful.
Yeah. And I want.
That's a level of emotion that. But currently, the movie doesn't have.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's right. And I want—I still want him to be uncomfortable during the beat-up scene. He wasn't. That was one thing that I made me a little uncomfortable. Actually, is he didn't
he
look uncomfortable.
He really got into it.
He really got into it, and
it made me uncomfortable. Yeah, not him.
And if he's like a B-13 or two, like Speedbagger, I want our guy to actually look like he's still capable. And
mm-hmm. well, my casting does that beautifully.
Yeah,
actually.
As did I. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, mine might not. Well,
and still
maybe.
Being older,
yeah.
So.
He's older, and yeah, okay.
So yeah, I think that more inline skating, like really intense inline skating, I think that mm-hmm. that'll just cut down on some of the rhetoric.
Yeah, the skating mixed with parkour and martial arts will make for some really exciting
action scenes. I want some chase
scenes. Yeah, absolutely, where they're bouncing off broken down cars, so they're using like doors that have fallen off as ramps and
them
all sorts
B-13
of great stuff.
Scenes.
And, oh yeah, man. Yeah. It should be great.
Yeah.
And it should be Death Race on skates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that the vehicles that are operational, that are like fuel operated, should be more motorcycles and fewer cars, just because the roads aren't going to be suitable for cars anymore.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough. And if they are, they're going to be like these big habits that can just push shit out of the way.
Yeah, like Humvees and Land Rovers and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, like if we're putting any wealthy people in them, I want them to be in Humvees that have, like, the pushers on them.
Yeah,
yeah,
and
just
armor
think, like,
and shit.
Yeah. Just think, yeah.
The only people driving them are wealthy people.
Yeah, and they, like, the front of their vehicles has got, like, the cow catchers on it, so it can just push shit in a side.
Oh, and I want them to just take out some poor person and they just keep driving.
Oh, yeah, no, that's this world. It's gross. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think it's time to cast.
Okay.
This will be fun. Maybe. Sam's like, all right, well, with your cast, how about you go first?
Okay, I will go first. This was a tough one to cast because there's only so many, like, recognizable young actors. Mm. But there's a lot of them out there if you do the research, and there was a lot of research this time for this one. So I'm going to start with my Griffin. I'm still not sure about it, but I went Patrick Schwarzenegger. I think that he'd be interesting in that kind of role. I don't know if he's physically capable of it, but he's a pretty competent actor.
Oh, well, that's one step above his dad.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen him.
Yeah, no, he's finally started. He's mostly supporting roles, but he's, what's the name of the movie? I can't remember the name of the movie that he was recently the lead in, but he's starting to get leading roles.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
All right.
For my Speedbagger, I cast Ving Rhames.
Ooh.
Okay. Yeah, he's put a few pizzas down since then, but I can't see him on skates or even a bike at this point, but
oh no, but
I would buy it.
Yeah,
but here's the whole point. That's he doesn't do that anymore. He just repairs bikes.
Yeah,
he doesn't need to do it.
Yeah,
and I still want my guy to look like he can take care of himself,
but. Yeah, but you know, I think Ving
can hit.
Yeah, but I think he's
that so much gravitas that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You can, no matter,
he can
what
be intimidating,
he
whether no matter what size he is.
I think his big paw could take out somebody if he wanted to.
Yeah. So I went,
he's got some hands on him.
And I wasn't thinking of that in terms of that particular role, but I wanted that sort of that somebody who's capable of that fatherly role, but also intimidating, and I did want that, and he's good at both of those.
He also can have like a cuddly aspect to him, I think.
Yeah, there's that too. Like I said, that fatherly aspect of it. For my Milty, I was Zachary Arthur. He was in Fifth Wave, and he played the son in Mom and Dad.
Awesome.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'm like, he'd be really good at that.
I got so distracted by Nicolas Cage and Mom and Dad, I forgot who the kids were.
For my Gary Lee, I went with an actor by the name of Christopher White, who's done a couple episodes of Gotham. He was in a recent Netflix movie called Vox Lux, quite good. And he actually looks a lot like the actor who played Gary Lee in the first place.
Cool.
That's funny, because I have a couple Gotham guys too, but not him.
Yeah. For my bongo, I went with Will Poulter.
Okay.
Yeah. Because he does have kind of have that look, and kind of that tough, mean guy look to him.
Mm-hmm.
All my big actors are supporting actors. For my Bullwinkle, I went with Logan Miller.
Okay.
For my Casey, I went with Georgia Wishlow. She is in Punisher. She's also in the TV series Scream.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, younger actress. I kind of like putting
the season 2 Punisher.
Mm-hmm. Season 2 Punisher. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Now this is where it gets fun. So for my Jaworski, the lieutenant, I went with Josh Brolin.
I like it. I'm going to go
That's
with it because I was looking at my list
I forgot him.
Yeah. I can't believe I forgot that Jaworski.
He's perfect.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I was going to have a little bit of fun with the supporting cast. Like I said, bring your big names in for support and then give these younger actors a chance to shine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot to cast the cops in general.
Yeah. And then you got the bums in seats.
For my Watt, I went with Ice Cube.
Cool. Yeah.
Because he can play...
Like, man, you cast a lot of people.
Yeah, and then for my Tyler, which is the other cop, I went with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I would love to see that dynamic.
That was great.
Yeah, I was thinking because I wanted this, because there's those great scenes where they're actually quite funny together.
Bigger
yeah.
names in minor roles.
Yeah, I figured why not do it that way? You get
I think
the star power
work.
Draw.
Yeah.
I think they would work really well.
I want to see. You know what? Now let's redo a buddy movie with those two.
Yeah. And then for my director, I went with David Leitch because I was thinking I want that Fast and the Furious aesthetic.
Cool. Yeah.
And then the John Wick action. It's like, I think I've used him before, but I don't care. I think he'd be perfect to do something like this.
That's very cool.
Yeah, that really over-the-top action. Yeah.
All awesome. Right, Trish, what do you got?
Okay. Well, way I approached this, and we've kind of gone a different way, but like I really leaned into the satire, a lot of it, which is how I kind of got... I'm going to start with my directors, actually, strangely enough, because... And I had like two ones that I was like leaning into, so I'll tell you them both. The first one was like Jason Reitman, because he does satire so well, and I was like going comedic satire when I was thinking about this. And Stacey Tytle, who did a movie called Last Supper, which I really liked. It's a, yeah, very 90s. It's this group of liberals who like invite people over and kill them. So it's an enjoyable romp. I went kind of comedy satire when I was thinking of this.
Trump dinner party.
Yep, exactly. So, and then my Griffin... He's done some physical stuff, and I don't know. I was kind of interested to see what he would do. I did a lot of bigger names because I haven't been watching a lot of like other TV. Tom Holland. I think he could run around. He's got that like boyish young innocence. But...
Oh, he could certainly do the physical stuff. I mean, the only reason I didn't go with him is because, I mean, I just...
He's already big. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think my budget could allow it, but
yeah.
I just...
Yeah, I kind of...
This is Dreamcasting.
Yeah, I kind of figured we'd be using lesser names like this movie did, but I thought about it a little bit, because I'm like, oh, he probably actually has more of a skater body than... That's, you know, they tend to be thinner, but, like, cut.
Yeah, and I mean he's a dancer and a gymnast, so I mean, he'd be capable of it. There's no
and
question.
If we're adding more like kind of parkour jumping around type of stuff.
Yeah. No, I do like it. Like I said, he was on my list, but I'm like, I just...
Yeah, I don't think Spider-Man could do that at all.
I know. For Casey, I went with Hailee Steinfeld because I'm like, I wanted her to have more of a bigger, more important role when I was casting this, and she's pretty good at doing that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I liked having her in there. Gary Lee, I think I went maybe a little bit older, but Caleb Landry Jones.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He's very intimidating, and I feel he could have that.
Who is that?
Charisma. He was in the X-Men ones. He was Banshee.
Okay, yep.
That's who he was. And then for Speedbagger, I had, he might be too old, but I mean, I still feel that he's got it in him, but Keith David.
Okay.
Because I just, I was watching something else with him, and I'm like, I just want to hear his voice more all the time.
No, he'd be good in that, too.
Yeah. Milty, I didn't cast, because again, I have trouble with kids, don't know why, can't do it. Bullwinkle, Taron Egerton. Bangle, Lucas Till.
I thought she was going to say Bunghole.
Bunghole. Yeah, Bunghole. That would be
there
a
should
new
be,
game.
There should be a new character called
there should
Bunghole.
Be a, there is going to be a character called Bunghole. And then, again, I didn't do the cops because I didn't think about that.
I totally forgot about the cops, too. I was like, I got my roller boys, and I thought I was done. And
well,
then
in
I'm
my
like, shit, I'm not done.
In my idea, I largely eliminated them, so that's pretty much why I didn't do it.
Yeah, I guess I kind of did, too.
Yeah, because I think you both were kind of cutting them out, but they need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in order to make the story...
I do get that.
I'm still not convinced.
Yeah. Somebody... See, there needs to be somebody there...
There needs to be corrupt cops.
Yeah, because he can't just go in without a motivation, right? Like, well, he's got a motivation, right? But I'm going to go in and I'm going to find all I can about, but what's he going to do with it? He needs something there, right? And
I guess he needs a push. I mean, they've got Casey already embedded, but she can't get up to that high.
She's a woman because they're sexist as well.
They're sexist as well.
They're all men, and she can't get into where they need to go.
She can't get the inner circle. But I think we need the cops have to show that level of corruption.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think that's why you have the two groups. You have the two cops that are monitoring and surveilling, but you have the lieutenant who believes he genuinely believes that law still has a place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one dude.
Yeah,
yeah. We can always have that cliched good cop guy.
You need the cliches sometimes.
Well, sometimes.
Yeah. You need that guy. That hopeful guy still exists in most places.
In a way, he kind of does will replace Speedbagger in some regards for partaking of those good lessons to our other characters. Yeah. All right. For my fantasy casting, I'll start with my director as well. I went with DJ Caruso.
Okay.
Directed I Am Number 4. XXX, The Return of Xander Cage.
Very action.
Are you sure you want this director, Jay?
The Disappointment
action
Room.
Action scenes he okay. can do.
The Disappointment Room.
Okay, there we go.
So, I mean, he can do drama occasionally. He's got a couple of good ones.
Yeah.
And but like, I kind of, I listened to those because, like, okay, yeah, there is... I almost went with the remake guy from the original Point Break.
It's a funny thing is that so did I.
Because unlike Trish, I actually like that movie.
Oh, yeah.
I like it more than the other one. All right. For my Griffin, you got to have a star. This one had a star. Mm-hmm. You need a star. I thought somebody with that boyish charm that we've already seen in kind of action roles, Josh Hutcherson from... The Hunger Games movies.
Because I wanted to cast kind of smaller, too, as well.
Yeah, and they have to look young, too. They still need to look like their early 20s or even younger.
Yeah.
Because that's who they were.
Yeah.
These characters, they actually cast for that age.
Mm-hmm.
For Casey, I went with Cameron Bikondova, who plays Selena Kyle on Gotham.
Nice.
Because he's 20 now, so it should be nice to see her do some bigger roles.
The Jump Street stuff.
Yes. This gentleman I used for Speedbagger, I mentioned in a guest spot in another episode for another show that you'll hear during All the Horror. Check out the Writer's Bagel Baskets. It'll drop in October during All the Horror Month, where all the podcasts get together and a new podcast with a horror theme drops every day, including the one we guested on Writer's Bagel Basket. So I do mention this gentleman on that show, and that is Adewale Akinawa Agabaji. And I know I screwed that up, but he was Mr. Echo on Lost, and he was Killer Croc on Suicide Squad, and he's in that late 60s category, but built like a brick shit house for a guy who's almost 70. I like, this is perfect. This guy looks like he can hold his own a little bit, but can still be that wise guy, older mentor guy. He was like my favorite part of Lost until he decided he didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, thank goodness you mentioned Mr. Echo, because the whole time I was watching, again, in that other episode, that person on screen, I was like, where do I know him from? And that clarifies
it.
Thank you.
That's where you are. For Milty, I went with Brady Noon, who's in The Good Boys, that's doing really well in the theaters right now. I'm like, hey, what's a hit movie with children? That children shouldn't watch, let alone be in. The Good Boys.
I don't know. Kids can watch it. They're the right age.
Yeah, I don't think so. Frank Delane, I cast as Gary Lee. He's in Fear of the Walking Dead and Sense8. I kind of wanted somebody who's almost kind of greasy looking.
Yeah.
I think he kind of fit the bill. For Bango, I went with Dockray Montgomery from Stranger Things and Power Rangers. He was the little girl's older brother, the one that drives the Camaro.
Okay.
The real dickhead with the long hair. Yeah. Was sleeping with all the
wolves. Yes. Yeah. I gotcha now.
Yeah, that dude. I'm like, oh yeah, he'd be a good Bango.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Logue, I want a... I cast Pinky, but I forgot to cast a cop. He's also on Gotham as Harvey Bullock, so I thought he'd make a good Pinky.
Yeah.
So, and Pinky's kind of a little bit of comedic relief, which Donald Logue can give.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So that's why I thought about that. And I went with Tyler Posey as Bullwinkle.
Yes, Tyler Posey was actually one of the people I was looking at as well. But yeah, like a lot of these movies that we do, I'm kind of leaning away from using stars in the lead roles, and I want to back end it with the stars.
I fell sort of off the wagon in this. I was
especially
struggling
with these younger roles, because there's so many young actors out there But yeah, everybody goes to the same ones because that's who people like.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, oh, yeah. I kind of dug deep. The only one I was super familiar with was Josh Hutcherson. Yeah. You still need that star, anchor. To hit that anchor to sell it. But most of the rest of them were kind of TV guys that I used, or not names that are known to an audience but would be recognizable to an audience. So yeah, I was kind of happy with my casting on this one, despite missing the cops.
Yeah, but yeah, no, that's why I split the difference. I'm like, Patrick Schwarzenegger, they've got name recognition, but he's an up-and-coming actor.
He had name recognition on his dad.
Yeah,
yeah, like,
it doesn't matter.
I didn't know there was another one acting until you said it.
Yeah,
I did.
But at the very least, people go, what the hell? What's this? Another Schwarzenegger acting? Let's see if he's any better than his dad.
I would like to just have, like, second and third generation actors all in this movie.
Yeah.
There you go.
Like, all right, well, there's Eastwood, there's Schwarzenegger, there's Willis.
That would be funny.
All the offspring of action stars.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Action sperm!
Yeah. Unfortunately, the Willis kids and the Eastwood kids are just a little bit old for this.
They're too old for this now. Yeah. But yeah.
It's the remake of The Expendables, but like it's an extension of them, so it's The Expendables.
The Extendables. Love it.
That's how you do it.
The Fast and the Fertile?
Oh, well done.
All right. If you like our stupid jokes, follow us on our social media. We are at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. Even the Roller Boys follow us on Twitter. Oh,
but much faster than we can walk because we're not on wheels.
Yet.
That's why they have the blue check mark and we don't. do us a favor, give us a 5-star rating and a short review over on iTunes and your favorite podcast providers that do that sort of thing. leave a little review. It helps people get there.
Your balls.
On the show. And where they can do that is a ton of different places. You can find it on our link tree, which is on our social media. But here's a few suggestions. Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, radio.com, their app, and even
frickin' YouTube.
Yeah, even frickin' YouTube. So if you can't find us, you're actively avoiding us. So help your friends who aren't listening to us find the show.
Yes, please.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, I don't know. I still like Roller Boys.
It was a really enjoyable watch.
Yeah.
It was not one of those movies where I felt the need to pick up and doing my research as I was watching. If that makes any sense at all. Like, there are movies where I'm doing research as we watch.
Yeah.
This one, I actually watched it and then did my research.
I have to say, before you guys mention it, I'd never heard of this film.
I'm not surprised.
I know. But I'm glad you put my eyes on it. There's a lot there.
We were both working at a video store at the time. Maybe not. 91? Maybe not. It could have been, I think it might have been a screener that was brought home.
Well, your brother was working at a video store.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I think I was still working Denny's.
Nice.
Maybe. I think so. Oh, maybe not. No. No.
It depends on when it came out in 91, because I was working at the video store in 91.
Yeah, I know I would have been at the video store because I turned 18 in 91, I do believe. So, yeah, I would have been there. So, yeah, it was either me or my brother. All of us were at video stores. So, probably one of us brought the screener home and watched it.
In 91, I was toiling away at the IGA.
Surprisingly good. Or either that or we went to one of those screeners.
No, I know that I saw this on video.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
Sometimes the video distribution guys would have like a big screen TV set up in a tiny little room with bags of popcorn. And it might have been one of those, but maybe not. I think it was a screener. Yeah. But it was one of those surprising little direct-to-video releases that, I guess it did get a small theatrical release. But yeah, it was actually surprisingly good for such a silly concept. And I can see why it didn't go theatrical very long, because it is a silly concept. But it's actually a really smart, silly concept.
Yeah. It's a smart, silly concept, but it's also too funny. I can also see the shades of Point Break in this one as well, and all that other stuff. But it's
considering it's the same screenwriter.
Yeah. It's really funny how it was so... Yeah, there's a lot here that was really prescient. And it's like, underrated for... It couldn't have been appreciated in its time. People weren't thinking like this then.
This almost feels like the rough draft of Point Break.
Yeah.
And it could have been. Like, we don't know what order these were written in and what script sat on the shelf longer, but it really is does feel like it, the same idea was kind of rehashed a bit with Collapse the U.S., idea, but it's still that embedded extreme sports guy.
And I mean the ethos of the two baddies, I guess, were are quite different, right? You've got,
well, one's likable and one's not.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
And the one's all about just sort of being free, and the other one's all about grabbing control.
Know, the only thing that was missing off that young blonde head of his was a mustache that was awkward and Hitler-esque.
Yeah.
Yes. What was funny too is when you talk about being free, it's like sort of like the baddie in Point Break, it's all about being free, and the goodie in Roller Boys, he just wants to be free as well of everything. So it was kind of interesting how that
A lot of the same concept and comes. It just shows you how things get recycled and ideas get recycled all the time and
reworked
reworked. Point Break's a better movie, let's face it,
but
even I don't care for that movie.
And they have the budget to do the extreme stuff they wanted to do.
That makes a big difference, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, I mean, technically, I guess they did kind of have the star power with this one, but not to the extent, I mean, because we had Haim, who was kind of, had already just peaked and was
on
that slow downward trajectory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, whereas you have Keanu, who was on that slow crawl rise that he's been on and that has yet to peak.
And Point Break, he was like this helped break him a little bit higher too. Like Point Break helped
certainly, because it moved him out of that goofy Bill and Ted mold
I think it was just too early for Corey Haim. He still had too much of a baby face to really pull off the embedded character, but
you needed more. I hate to say it, a little more talent.
He might have been 19, but he looked like he was 15.
Yeah, that's part of it. And I mean, this was his first sort of attempt to break into something other than the teen comedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's all right in this movie. Like, it's not... The movie itself reviews at IMDb is like a 5.6 out of 10. And the Rotten Tomatoes, there weren't even critic scores there. It just weren't enough. But audience score was about 65%, which is kind of where it is. This is why we pick these movies. It's like, okay, didn't hit with the audiences. I mean, I don't think it's not even a cult film because most people don't know it exists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's actually a decent little hidden gem.
Yeah, and like some
for
of the reviews,
as silly as it sounds.
Yeah. Some of the reviews that I read on IMDb were much like that. It's a decent film. It's not a great film.
Yeah.
There's some really great stuff in it, and then there's some not so great stuff in it.
Yeah, and much like the Point Break remake, I mean, there's things you can do and change it a little bit and rework it to make it at least another mediocre film, at the very least. I'm not sure if we made it a great film, but I think we still made an entertaining one.
Yeah, and I mean, we want to keep the concepts we want to keep, too. Like, I mean, I think this is a movie, I think you kind of had to go one of two ways with it, where it's like you either are going for the high-level concepts or you're going for the action. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like trying to give both of them equal time. I don't know if you'd have enough time in a movie to do that as well.
And if you can track it down. It is worth the watch, especially considering how much of it is still true today and maybe more so than it ever has been.
Yes.
So give it a watch and then tell me that maybe this message doesn't need to go out again.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some reason, and that's ultimately why remakes happen, is if you don't look at the past, you're doomed to repeat it, and it happens in movies all the time, and it's happening in real life as well.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That was Roller Boys from 1990. I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I continue to be Trish.
And we are rolling on out of here.
You know, it's about time when you two shot each other.
I didn't shoot him.
Well, I'm not complaining, believe me. Bullwinkle was a psycho. He's better off dead. Gary Lee doesn't like me drinking on the job. You promise you won't tell? Ah. Breakfast is still the most important meal of the day.
Yeah. Hey, what's this?
That is the rope. That's Gary Lee's secret high-performance additive.
The rope?
You ever wonder why Gary Lee doesn't want any of the roller boys to do the mist?
No, what are you talking about?
You do want to have little roller boys one day, don't you, Griff? The rope, man, the rope. That's Gary Lee's gene pool experiment. It's the final solution. Day of the rope, day of the rope. Get it, Griff? Eliminate the week. We having fun yet?